CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor with Bill Raggio, the senior fellow of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. We've walked backwards with the map. So now we turn to August, where we are right now. The Taliban is saying that they will not extend the deadline of evacuation of, we don't know how many, maybe 80,000 is mentioned in the London media, maybe more in the rest of the country. We don't have good reporting. We've walked backwards from the map. We know on the 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th of August, the city of Kabul comes under Taliban threat. Control might be too big of a word. Now the U.S. and its allies are forming a defensive perimeter at the international airport. However, there is the part of the story that Bill could not detail in a geographic way, which is Al-Qaeda and then ISIS. So let's start with Al-Qaeda. Bill, you and Tom and your colleagues have made it very clear that Al-Qaeda never left Afghanistan. And yet they are not under command and control of the Taliban. They're allies, but not reporting to each other. What do we know now about Al-Qaeda in the country or Al-Qaeda outside the country looking in?
Yes, John. The Al-Qaeda story in this Taliban offensive is, and even before, is the most undertold story in Afghanistan. The President of the United States says that Al-Qaeda is done in Afghanistan. And, you know, we keep getting this. I always joke it's a D word. I actually said gone, but I always say it's a D word. It's decimated. It's defeated. It's degraded. Pick your D word for that. But the reality is that's just not true. I mean, earlier this year, I went through Al-Qaeda's propaganda of where it said it was fighting in Afghanistan. Even when it was supposed to be keeping a lid on it, it couldn't contain its glee. And we detected Al-Qaeda presence just based on this, on the areas where it said it was fighting. And believe me, that's not all of the areas. It was in 16 of Afghanistan's 34 provinces. The UN concurred. They cited my report in their sanctions and monitoring report from earlier in the year. So we know that Al-Qaeda has been part of this. We know Al-Qaeda has been operating training camps in Afghanistan. We know we've killed senior Al-Qaeda leaders. But one place where Al-Qaeda's hand was very visible in this, particularly in this offensive, was in the north. And this is where Al-Qaeda used, it leveraged the various local or regional jihadist groups like Islamic Movement Uzbekistan, Ansarullah, which is a Tajik-based jihadist group, Turkestan Islamic Party, and groups like that, and helped integrate them into the Taliban's leadership. I saw this happening in the early 2010s. The military was issuing press releases saying an Islamic Movement Uzbekistan leader was also a Taliban leader and a shadow district governor in this province or that province. And that was a key indication that this integration was happening. And Al-Qaeda helped organize this, helped direct this. And that's how the North fell so quickly, because Al-Qaeda used those groups to help integrate local populations. So the Al-Qaeda threat remains. And a victory for the Taliban here is certainly a victory for Al-Qaeda. I expect there to be an effect like we saw in Iraq and Syria when the Islamic State declared its caliphate. Here, the Taliban will declare their emirate. And everyone in the jihadist community knows the role that Al-Qaeda played here. And it has effects on orders that we just can't understand.
This connects us with the statement we started with in our conversation this day. Haqqani. The Haqqani family making a statement in late June that you've got to concern yourself with civilian governance. Haqqani is a connector to Al-Qaeda, almost a deputy of Al-Qaeda in the region, in the Pakistan to Afghanistan region. I believe I've seen the name Haqqani mentioned in some remarks given from the Kabul capital. Wherever we see a Haqqani or the Haqqani network, do we also see Al-Qaeda? Can we say that, Bill?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, Al-Qaeda has fundraised for the Haqqanis and vice versa. This is all bears out in designations. Recruit, train, arm, you know, provide military advice. It's not just the Haqqanis. It's for other elements of the Taliban as well. The Haqqanis are just the most visible element. It's the one that everyone could see. Now, keep in mind when the U.S. was heavy in the drone campaign in the late 2000s and early to mid 2010s, numerous top level Al Qaeda leaders were killed in areas controlled in that Pakistan controlled by the Haqqanis. Often Haqqani leaders or operatives were killed alongside these senior Al Qaeda leaders. They go hand in hand, particularly when it's difficult at this point. And I know that this view is ridiculed, but then keep in mind me warning people about the Taliban, the potential for Taliban takeover because of the rural insurgency strategy was also ridiculed by a lot of people. I'm sure the same people will ridicule this, but it's hard to discuss the Haqqanis without discussing Al Qaeda at this point. It's hard to see where one begins and the other, ends. And, one thing to keep in mind, Al Qaeda swears allegiance to Al Qaeda as emir. So in that power relationship, while Al Qaeda is more of an external, a bigger worldview thing, it does view the Taliban's leader as its overall leader. It's a complex relationship. It's a symbiotic relationship that few understand, like Tom and I.
ISIS has acted as an outside threat to everyone these last months with attacks on sectarian attacks. There was one attack, I believe, that was timed to murder school children. And it did. And Taliban denied it. Al Qaeda maintains that it's an opponent of ISIS. The Biden administration has made mention of ISIS in these last days. I've not seen any reporting that says that ISIS is in the field or ISIS is in Kabul. What do we know about what we call the Khorasan province?
Yes. So the Taliban, Al Qaeda on one side and ISIS on the other. Now, oh, by the way, keep in mind with the prison breaks, with all these prisons falling to the Taliban, hundreds of Al Qaeda and Islamic State fighters have been freed from the prisons. The Taliban executed the emir of the Islamic State when they broke him out of prison. So I think they sent a message. I think the Taliban's trying to tell all the fighters who's boss and to get back in line. But there is there's obviously a conflict between the two. The Taliban likes to have primacy of the jihad in Afghanistan. The Islamic State threatens that. But here's something to note. Since the Taliban has taken over Kabul, there hasn't been a single major Islamic State attack that I've been able to detect on. Now this could change, and certainly, but as of yet, the Islamic State hasn't targeted Hazara or Shia or other ethnic minorities. You know, there's been a theory going around that the Islamic State, since it was defeated by the Taliban, within the last couple of years, that it's been kept on a tight leash by the Taliban, and its attacks, gives the Taliban plausible deniability. So in the case of like a killing Hazara, say in Kabul in a massive suicide attack, it destabilizes the situation. It causes questions to arise about the government. It weakens the government, but it keeps the stain of attacking civilians off the hands of the Taliban and into the hands of the Islamic State. So it remains to be seen. Will the Islamic State organize and oppose the Taliban? I think the Taliban are well prepared for this. I think what it's mainly done over the last since the rise of the Islamic State, except in certain instances where the Islamic State got too uppity, is that it's really reserved its combat power to face the United States and the Afghan government. So basically, the Taliban had bigger fish to fry, and if the Islamic State want to create a situation to fry the smaller fish, then the Taliban are up to the task.
The suicide attack on the defense secretary and the assassination of the prominent news person in Afghanistan that just prior to the taking of Kabul, were those linked in any fashion to ISIS or were those Taliban operations?
The first was linked to the Taliban. The second, it's unclear, but very likely was part of the Taliban's assassination campaign. One of the things that the Taliban did leading up to the capture of Kabul was assassinate key military, political, and civil society personnel in order to soften it up for when it did march into Kabul, that everyone would get in line.
I'm speaking with Bill Rajo. He is a senior fellow of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. He and his colleague Tom Jocelyn and their colleagues keep the Long War Journal, which is a chronology of the tragedy. A moment we're watching in Kabul started 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Afghanistan extends back to tragedy in the 19th century and before. These are the remains of a a very deep and important civilization that dates back 3,000 or 4,000 years. However, this civilization is also built on a geography that makes resistance, guerrilla fighting, easy. That's what defeated the British in 1839 to 1842, again in 1878 to 1880, again in 1919, defeated the Soviets in the 1980s, and defeated the Americans in the 21st century. Guerrilla fighting because of the geography. When we come back, it begins again in the Panjshir Valley. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.